From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Bloch. We turn now to All Tech Considered. Several months ago, we talked about all the new ways to watch TV shows on your computer screens. But the ultimate in-home viewing remains the iconic living room movie night. Slip in a DVD, grab some popcorn, the kids, and pile on the couch. Well, now, thanks to a host of new devices, you can stream full-length films, some in HD, directly to your TV. No time constraints, no video stores, and most importantly, tons of choices that are always available on demand. But as NPR's Yuki Noguchi recently learned, not every movie download experience is so user-friendly.
If there's one place where a person should be able to access every movie known to man, you'd think it would be our living room. My husband, Christopher Libertelli, is chief architect of our home entertainment system.
So we have this situation in our living room cabinet. Why don't you describe what we have in here?
We have a tuner. We've got a DVD Blu-ray player. We have a TiVo box.
Plus Apple TV, a Sling box, and a Mac Mini, which allows us to watch the internet on our TV. In all, that's six machines. One recent weekend evening, we put this setup to a test. We tried to download City of God, a 2002 film nominated for several Academy Awards.
Whoa. There was a problem accessing the video on demand screen.
Our first issue, we're told, is that our Wi-Fi internet connection is marginal, so we reset it three times. When it's back up, Christopher searches iTunes.
And we're looking for City of God, and it did not come up.
Instead, we're offered City of Joy, a Patrick Swayze feature my husband doesn't care for. So then we search Amazon's Unbox service.
City of Angels, City of Dreams, City of Ember, City of Joy, City of Lost Children, City of Missing Girls. Nothing.
Nothing about City of God. Our next attempt involves the Netflix download service, which requires us to fire up our laptop and log into its website. Netflix also requires us first to order the movie in what it calls our instant queue before we can download it.
City of God. Sure enough, it is available, but it is only available on DVD.
It turns out the only things we can download include movies like Surfer Dude. I mean, we're talking about movies I wouldn't even watch for free on an airplane.
Yuki, nobody ever said digital convergence was going to be easy. They just said it was going to happen.
So we give it one more go, this time on Blockbuster site, which requires its own software download. And you might have guessed by now, City of God is once again not available for download. At this point, my husband draws the only conclusion possible to draw.
No, we've given Hollywood four different ways to get the movie that we want, and they've decided that we're not worthy.
And so our evening ends with some good old-fashioned live television. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.
And we're joined now by our tech expert, Omar Gayaga, who covers technology culture for the Austin American Statesman. Omar, good to talk to you.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And do you think Yuki and her husband just made a bad choice there with City of God, or is this a pretty common thing? If you're looking for maybe a foreign independent movie, you might be out of luck.
Well, it's funny. It seems like it's always the one movie you're looking for that's not in stock. I kind of got lucky with City of God, though. I actually own that on DVD. But when it comes to movie selection, I'm sort of in the opposite camp. When I look at my Netflix Watch It Now queue or on Vudu or iTunes, these other services, I'm usually overwhelmed by how many movies are available that I just don't have time to watch. Mm. But then again, I have a 21-month-old, so that might have a lot to do with it.
Yeah, it could be.
Netflix's streaming service actually has a pretty deep selection of indie films and documentaries. Back before they started adding a lot of the Hollywood stuff, that was a lot of what you would find on there. I remember a few months ago, I watched this year's Oscar winner for Best Documentary, Man on Wire, using Netflix on my Xbox 360 game console. It looked great. It looked just as good as a DVD. So, you know, it really depends on what service you're using. These digital libraries continue to expand. It's still relatively new, but if you're open to different stuff that is available, you're going to find a lot there.
Might have to make some compromises.
You might, yeah, depending on what service you use and what hardware.
Well, Omar, with all the devices out there, what really works and what doesn't? We heard Yuki just now saying that she had, what, six devices at her disposal. Would I need to do that if I wanted to download a movie and watch it on my TV?
You know, there are some specialized devices like the $99 Roku Netflix player, the $150 Vudu player, which I've been having some success with. These allow you to rent or buy HD movies over the internet. But also many new Blu-ray players, TiVo boxes, and the Xbox 360 game console, they have ways of accessing either Netflix or Amazon's Unbox service, where you can get a lot of content even in HD.
Hmm. Now, do you really need a gizmo, Omar? I mean, couldn't you? It seems like it should be simple. Take a cable from your laptop or your computer, plug it into your TV, download, stream movies that way, and watch them on your TV.
That actually is what a lot of people are doing. Like in the report with the Mac Mini, if your computer or laptop has the appropriate output, and especially if your TV has a PC input, it makes it quite a lot easier. But for people that have older computers or a TV that's not an HDTV with that kind of input, it can be a lot more difficult. You really have to do a little bit of homework and kind of figure out what kind of connection for video and for audio you need to make. But once you have that set up, there actually is some really good software for that. Hulu Desktop was just introduced last week. That actually brings that sort of living room set-top box experience to any computer that you can hook up to your TV. There's also Boxy, which is very popular and incorporates a lot of these services like Netflix. But, you know, it kind of seems like a stopgap to me. It seems like we're sort of waiting for this next generation of HDTVs that are going to have these services included in the hardware. You won't have to have these set-top boxes or sort of jump through these hoops to get your computer hooked up to your TV. The TV will actually have the internet connection and be able to access, say, Netflix or Hulu. Samsung, LG, and Sony, they're all starting to roll out these kinds of televisions. And I think by the end of this year, we're going to see a lot more models on the market.
And I want more about this from you on the AllTech blog.
Yeah, we will be posting links to a lot of this information. There was an interesting Wall Street Journal piece recently about people kind of cutting the cord. We'll be linking to all of that on npr.org/alltech.
Omar, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Omar Gayaga covers technology culture for the Austin American Statesman. And now a word about next week. We're going to be reporting on children and technology, specifically small children and their parents' expensive electronics. So a question for you. Has your preschooler ever accidentally called 911 on your BlackBerry or dropped your cell phone in the toilet? We want to hear your stories about kids and high-tech toys at the All Tech Considered blog. Again, that's npr.org/alltech. And we'll include some of your stories on the air next week.
President Obama plans to provide some answers of his own today about how to better protect the nation's computer networks. He'll be releasing a widely anticipated review of the nation's cybersecurity. Military and intelligence leaders say protecting computer networks from hackers, spies, and terrorists is one of the nation's top national security problems. And we have more this morning from NPR's Brian Naylor.
Foreign governments stealing U.S. military secrets. Foreign companies stealing advanced technology and intellectual property from American firms. It happens every day, says James Lewis of the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a Washington think tank.
They're not mom-and-pop operations. They're not little kids. These are the spies of the 21st century, and they've been very successful.
Republican Congressman Michael McCaul of Texas, who contributed to a recent CSIS cybersecurity report, says the problem reaches across government. We reached him on his cell phone.
We know that last year alone, almost every federal agency had been penetrated, and massive amounts of data were stolen from our federal government.
The Pentagon, NASA, and air traffic networks were among those targeted. Lewis says the nation's power grid is particularly vulnerable. He points to a blackout 6 years ago that, while not caused by terrorists, was still disruptive.
You know, everyone remembers the 2003 blackout in the Northeast. It's likely that three or four countries have the capability to do that kind of thing again.
The president today is expected to lay out a strategy for protecting the nation's computer networks. It starts with a cybersecurity advisor who will report to him as part of the National Security Council within the White House. The president's economic advisors are also expected to have a role. Rod Beckstrom says the bureaucratic structure is important. Beckstrom recently resigned from his position as director of cybersecurity in the Department of Homeland Security. He's wary of giving the NSC and the military primacy over the civilian side.
The commercial sector is the primary user of the- the Internet and we as citizens. And the National Security Council doesn't in general represent that perspective as well as a group like the Council of Economic Advisers might, that are very attuned to the economy and business.
Privacy advocates, meanwhile, are worried that aggressive government efforts to secure the Internet and other computer networks could trample privacy and civil liberties. Gregory Nogheim is with the Center for Democracy and Technology.
Unlimited government access to private communications would chill those communications.
Nogheim praises the Obama administration for listening to privacy concerns. Unlike many government problems, this one does not seem to require massive amounts of money. Instead, advocates say it's about better coordinating existing government efforts. Rod Beckstrom says one key component is making the Internet more secure.
And that is the best investment we can make, and it's been almost entirely ignored by our federal government. And we might see something in this report to move a little bit in that direction. We need to go a lot farther.
And cybersecurity analysts say today's review cannot be the end, but only the start of the Obama administration's attention to the problem. Brian Naylor, NPR News, Washington.
Next, let's report on what happens if you have an interest in an obscure book. You may have experienced that frustration of walking into a bookstore and being told that the book you want is out of print or not in stock. One company's trying to make books available on demand. They can be printed one at a time while you wait. Some are calling this one of the most significant steps in publishing in the last 500 years. That company has installed a trial machine at a bookstore in central London, and NPR's Rob Gifford went along to take a look.
Marcus Gipps is in love with a machine, or at least it sometimes seems that way.
Effectively, it's a great big office printer stuck to a rather lovely, in my opinion, but perhaps not the most aesthetically pleasing collection of technology.
The friendly, bespectacled bookseller is floor manager of Blackwell's Bookstore on London's Charing Cross Road, perhaps the most bookish corner of one of the world's most bookish cities. The machine he's gazing lovingly at is the new espresso machine. Nothing to do with coffee beans, this baby's grinding out books.
The printer runs at about 100 pages a minute, so I mean you can work out for yourself how quickly you can get things done.
The machine then sticks and binds the pages together itself, and out comes a book. A real book, just the same as all the other books on Blackwell's shelves. Marcus Gibbs says they already have 500,000 titles saved digitally on the espresso ready to print. That's five times the number they have on the shop floor. And within 3 months, they should have more than 1 million available. He says it's changing the whole way people will look at purchasing books.
I just typed in my surname and I looked for a few things and I found a book by my great-granduncle, which he wrote in 1901 and was published in Shanghai. I printed that off my dad, it made his day. We've been printing off stuff like Darwin's early work. I mean, nobody really wants Darwin's work on earthworms, which was one of his first published books. There's a small market for it on the second-hand market where it goes for about £500, £600 normally, even in a tatty condition. We printed one off for a customer and he walked out with it and it was £10.
That's a bargain at $15, and what that means is that in future, if other smaller bookstores get one of these machines, not cheap to be sure, at about $175,000, they'll be able to compete much better with bigger stores, with internet stores, and also with the rise of electronic books. The company that makes the espresso, On Demand Books in New York, calls it an ATM for books. CEO Dane Neller says it's the biggest revolution in publishing since Gutenberg started printing more than 500 years ago. He says it will certainly keep paper books way ahead of electronic books such as the Amazon Kindle.
You're right that our technology now makes possible for the printed page to move as rapidly as the electronic page. Still, the printed book still remains overwhelmingly the dominant way books are read. I mean, I think the last statistic I saw worldwide, the electronic book is still less than 0.5%. I think it will grow, but I still think the printed book will be the dominant way people consume literature.
Back at Blackwell's in London, in addition to the out-of-print authors and the academic authors, there's another type of author who's helped by the espresso machine.
My name's Jennifer Brown. And I'm here because I popped out of my work lunch hour because I finished my first book about a month ago and I really wanted to get it published. So this seemed a perfect opportunity.
There she stands, fulfilling her childhood dream, an author holding a copy of her own newly printed first novel entitled Abstractions of Feeling. Now trying to find an agent and a publisher, Jennifer Brown loves the espresso machine.
Wonderful. Makes you feel like a real author. Really feels like all that hard work is worthwhile. And now even if I don't get a publisher, I'll have something to give to my friends to show them that I've done something, I've achieved something.
Books on Demand say they have 5 machines already available to the public in the United States. They plan 25 around the world by the end of this year and hope to have several thousand worldwide within 5 years. Rob Gifford, NPR News, London.